Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Small business owner, you're a special force in the marketplace. I consider you to be a latter-day pioneer and truly one of my heroes.
Welcome back, heroes. 13 after. Almost 13 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me tell you who our guest is this hour. I mentioned her to you earlier in the hour. Leslie Kossoff is principal of Kossoff Management Consulting, an international consulting firm located in the San Francisco Bay Area. They specialize in executive development and organizational excellence. Formerly an associate of Dr. W. Edwards Deming, the father, maybe grandfather, of quality in the world, in my opinion. And she was a director of the Institute for Quality and Productivity Improvement at California State University. She's a much sought-after speaker and consultant to clients throughout the U.S. and Europe. She's the author of Managing for Quality and her new book, Executive Thinking, which we're going to talk about another day. Today, we're going to focus on quality. Leslie Kossoff, welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you back with us. I've been looking forward to getting you back on ever since the last time you were here, because I want to talk to my audience about quality, about the not quality as an activity, but quality as a philosophy. And if you can create a philosophical quality philosophy in your company, lots of good things will happen in your business. But before we get into some of the specifics, Leslie. Leslie and I have a mutual friend named Kelly, and I always think about her when I have Leslie on the show. Leslie, what I'd like to do is get you to bring us forward a little bit more with the history. The last time you were here, we stopped off right after World War II, and you had just told us that after World War II, some of the systems that were installed in American industry that were quality related basically were thrown out because we weren't fighting a war, and the guys came back from the war and took over the jobs from the women, and they didn't know anything about quality, and we really didn't have as much competition in the world, so we really didn't have to be as efficient. So you were telling us that quality kind of went away.
It absolutely went away, at least the way that we had come to understand it, and the way that we eventually came to understand it again. But that whole idea of constantly looking for ways of continually improving your operations, measuring what you do, really getting a good solid handle on what it is you're doing, how you're doing it, and are the outputs matching what mm-hmm. your goals are, that went away because, yes, as you said, we had no competition, and so we simply we didn't feel the need to address it any longer. But what then happened, and we talked about this a little bit as well, was that the folks in Japan who knew what we had been doing during World War II did, in fact, pursue exactly what we had stopped doing.
Well, they were motivated because of what they had just gone through, and we were not motivated.
Absolutely. They had nothing left, really, to work with. They were starting from scratch, and the attitude was, if we're going to start from scratch, we want to do it the right way. And they did. And
out of the ashes rises the phoenix.
Absolutely. And boy, in the case of Japan, that's a very exact description. What they did, and again, picking up a little bit from our last discussion, they invited Dr. Deming, who was over there to do the census, mm-hmm. to help them learn and understand what it was that they needed to know to be able to create the organizations that would be able to take whole markets, to really rebuild the country, because it was not a matter of just looking at a company. It was a matter of truly rebuilding a country at that point. Mm-hmm. And they took it on in that way. And one of the things that Deming promised them was that if they really learned his techniques and tenets, that within 5 years they would be able to turn their country around. And in fact, he was correct.
Yeah.
That within 5 years.
5 years?
Yes, which actually puts us into the latter part of the 1950s. Mm-hmm. But by that time, they had already turned around so completely from where they were that they were already making the inroads into our markets and into markets all around the world very slowly, and again, at that time, not with the high-quality products.
Right. In those days, made in Japan, in those days, 40 years ago or so, made in Japan still was synonymous with cheap and poor quality.
Absolutely. But by the mid-1960s, that was already changing radically.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because then we were looking at companies like Sony and the rest.
Well, the exactly, and there are two other companies that I did business with back in the early, actually late, one in the late 60s and then as early as the early 70s. One of them was Yamaha.
Mm-hmm.
Yamaha was making, when you thought Yamaha made motorcycles, Yamaha was actually, the symbol that you see on the Yamaha motorcycle is a tuning fork.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because long before they ever made motorcycles, they made beautiful, magnificent, world-class musical instruments. And I bought a guitar in the 60s, a Yamaha guitar. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, in the 70s, I bought a Datsun automobile
mm-hmm.
that just ran and ran and ran.
Yes. They...
And so that was, my point is, that was when the quality issue was starting to turn.
And it was the first time that we were seeing that they were doing something over there that we weren't. And by the mid-70s, it started hitting directly into our market share, and it was seen most directly in the automobile industry.
That's right.
And ultimately, that led to the resurgence of Deming back into this country, and at that point, he was in his late 70s.
But incredibly, folks, we're talking about, really, Leslie, a 30-plus year hiatus of quality in this country.
Absolutely.
In our quality, folks, in the strict sense of the word, in the way that Mr. Deming, the Dr. Deming, thought of quality.
Yes.
Because, and I can just see him. You were talking about, last week I said, was there actually a meeting? And you actually recalled hearing of a meeting where they sort of, you know, kind of dismissed him, and he went off to Japan. And when I say they, I mean the U.S. industrialists. But I can just see him with, and I've read his book, and I know how he thinks a little bit, and I can see him being so passionate and so almost dogmatic about his attitude about quality. And those guys, those major U.S. corporations were saying, hey, you know, we don't have to go to all that much trouble. We're making money like things are.
Absolutely. And to the end of his life, frankly, he was dogmatic about the way that he believed that management should be running their companies. For the wonderful thing about Deming and his theory is that he did not see the theory as being something outside of the company or applied by a particular department. And again, as you talk about quality process versus quality service, his whole thinking was get it in from the beginning, make management the driver.
Right, exactly. Stand by, Leslie. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blessingham, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Leslie Kossoff. She's the author of Managing for Quality, and her other book is called Executive Thinking. 888-822-8255. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Leslie Kossoff is our guest. She's our friend and our quality expert, member of our Brain Trust now. And Leslie, I'm looking forward to a lot more information from you about quality and about how to do a better job in our companies. And I'm really glad to have you as part of our team.
Thank you.
We're talking, folks, about quality, about the concept of quality, the philosophy of quality, and the implementation. We're going to talk a little bit about the implementation, too. But, Leslie, we were getting to the point where you were bringing us into the 70s, and it looks like only because of the threat, not because of a good management, it was a good management idea, but literally, purely from being threatened, American industry was dragged, kicking and screaming, into quality. Is that an overstatement?
No, that is exactly correct. And it started out with the automobile industry.
Yep. Well, they listen. I mean, everyone. I mean, the story about the Japanese kicking our butts in the automobile industry in the 70s and early 80s is classic.
It is, and the most interesting thing to me about it is that the decisions that the Japanese companies made about what products people were looking for, what kinds of You know, the fact was, at that point, we were looking for small, fuel-efficient cars.
Mm-hmm.
And the Japanese companies had the exact same data that the American companies had. The American companies turned their backs on the data and said, no, people will still be more than happy to replace their car every year or two. They still want to buy those big, gas-guzzling, boat kind of cars.
Yeah.
And just blew off, frankly. The data that they were provided, the Japanese companies paid attention and continued to improve the product to such an extent that eventually the American companies couldn't ignore the fact that they had lost a segment of the market that they knew they would never get back again.
Well, you would think that they would have just taken a lesson from Volkswagen. I mean, the Volkswagen Beetle was incredibly successful in this country. I mean, there were whole dealerships that sold nothing but Beetles.
Mm-hmm.
The Volkswagen Bug, and so, I mean, that should have told them that people will buy these little, the small, inexpensive cars. That was one thing. But the other thing that happened that really was kind of the thing that put this over the edge, and this was something that neither America or Japan had anything to do with, and that was the OPEC crisis.
Yes.
That really played right into the Japanese hands, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Although we were seeing the signs of it from even before, just the whole question of, do we want to keep getting our cars repaired as often as we do? Why do we have to take on those costs?
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of issues that are those quality service issues that you talk about had already come to the fore. But then, yes, absolutely, it was OPEC that took it over the top and drove the need for those small and fuel-efficient cars.
Right. All right. Now, so we're into the 70s and early 80s. Now we're getting into where quality is starting to become talked about in the United States.
What happened was Donald Peterson, who was then the CEO of Ford Motor, realized they were doing something in Japan that needed to be done here in the United States. And
about what year was that?
77.
Okay.
And Mr. Peterson invited Dr. Deming to come to Ford and to teach them what it was that they needed to know to be able to compete in this new world that had a new set of rules, as far as America was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Deming, made the same proviso that he did with the Japanese companies. Unless the CEO was going to be actively involved, he was not willing to take on the company as a client. Don Peterson was more than willing to get actively involved, and so Deming did work with Ford and worked with them for a number of years. The most immediate and direct output of Deming's presence inside of Ford that we saw was the Taurus.
Yeah.
And that was really the point at which suddenly the design cycle had been cut radically by years, literally, from inception to manufacturing.
And it's still a model that's rocking and rolling even today.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a high-quality car that, you know, they were able to turn out something that they simply had not been able to do before.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime,
Let me stop you because we're going to come up to a break, but I want to make one comment before we do. I want you to pick up on this, and then we're going to go directly into some applications, applying quality in your business. If quality is not something that comes down from the very top, you will not be successful. This is not something you can assign to your managers, folks. If you own the company, if you don't believe in quality process will not be successful in your organization. And Dr. Deming said that, and it is true still today. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It's 29 after. Our good friend Leslie Kossoff is our guest. She's the author of Managing for Quality, How to Implement and Manage a Business Strategy of Continuous Improvement. And her new book is called Executive Thinking, The Dream, The Vision, The Mission Achieved. Leslie Kossoff, the last name is spelled Kossoff. If you're going to any of the online bookstores and you're typing in a name to find Leslie's books. Leslie, besides the online bookstores, where else are they available?
They are available through bricks and mortar stores. And also Managing for Quality, which, only because it's a slightly older book, is a little bit harder to find, is available. I have a fulfillment number that people can call, which is 888-265-2732.
Okay. All right. And
If you're having any trouble finding those books, folks, just let me know and I'll make sure that we get that worked out for you. Okay, Leslie, the history lesson is about over for today. We're not going to talk about history. I really think it's important. If a small business owner is listening to us and they believe that they need to introduce the concept of quality, they like the idea that they'd rather have a quality process than quality service, that they'd rather fix it when they make it rather than having to fix it after they break it, and they like that idea. To me, if they're really going, if the owner, if the person at the top, as you say, and as Dr. Deming would have said, if the person at the top has got to be the person that drives quality in that organization, to me, without understanding where we've come from in terms of quality, and not only in this country, but in the world, if you don't understand that, you're going to have a very shallow taproot, and you and I both know that it is not a piece of cake to install a quality process in a company.
No,
and if you don't have that background, it'll be more difficult. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And I agree with that story wholeheartedly. It's true. There's such a tendency to simply go into the quality arena without realizing that there's a larger context, and as a result, not learning from the mistakes that were made.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, even though as we've been talking about this, picking up with the 1970s and look what Ford did and all of the rest of that, what really the 1980s and the early 1990s were, they provided us with more lessons in how to fail in this arena mm-hmm. than how to succeed. And particularly for small business owners, it's crucial that the learning and the understanding about what went wrong in other arenas is prominent so that you don't make those same mistakes.
Right.
They're very, very predictable.
And very expensive.
Oh,
the mistakes
gotcha.
Are very expensive and become prohibitive.
Yes.
For a small business. A small business can't float another bond issue. They can't take another, you know, they can't sell more stock on the stock market. They can't cut dividends. They don't pay any dividends, so they can't cut something they don't have. And so they can't afford to make any mistakes with quality, with installing quality. And that's the reason why I will have Leslie on the show with us, so she can help you and me to install a quality process in our companies and make as few mistakes as possible. What would be the first thing that you would want us to think about?
The first thing, and particularly for small business owners, I find that this is one of the most difficult things, is to realize that literally 97% of what happens inside of your business is predictable.
Mm-hmm.
You may not like it, but you can predict that it's going to happen, which forces the business owner to take a step back and look at his or her organization with objective eyes and really recognize the fact that the things that are happening that they don't like are not a surprise. And most of the crises that occur are not, in fact, crises or didn't have to be because everybody knew it was going to happen. They just didn't take action early enough to keep it from happening.
Now, one of the things that I think puts small companies off a little bit are these two words, statistical analysis.
Yes.
You guys... That's the bedrock, isn't it? That's the nucleus of the quality in its purest form is statistical analysis, isn't it?
Ultimately, it is, because Deming was a statistician. The theory is actually built on a statistical model, but it's a management theory. And so for all that it's off-putting to the business owner to think that they're going to have to spend a lot of time doing statistics, first of all, they're not going to have to spend a lot of time doing statistics. For those statistics that they do put together, the math is going to be very easy. But more than anything else, it starts with the business owner understanding that quality is a strategic decision. It's not, you don't immediately think about how it's going to impact you operationally. But instead, as the owner, and this is really why business owners buy into the idea of quality, is that you stand back, you look at your organization, and you say, okay, how are we going to differentiate ourselves even further from our competition? How are we currently differentiated from our competition?
Mm-hmm.
How are we viewed by our customers? How do we want to be viewed by our customers? And then, not only in our industry, how are we seen and what is considered best about our particular company, but when we look at other industries, what are the kinds of things that lead people to say, wow, that's a great organization, and how can we take those lessons learned and apply them into our organization, even if on the surface there's no direct connection?
Stand by, Leslie. Well said. Folks, what she basically said then was you can even install a quality process into your marketing plan. 39 After. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame. And my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out. There are a lot of new things there, a bunch of new articles, and we're about to post quite a few more new articles. It's all the articles, the archives, and the Brain Trust are all arranged in a really cool search engine. You can search by any of the sections or by the entire site. Type in a keyword or a name. It works like a charm. Works perfectly. And also, when you're there, don't forget to sign up for my newsletter. It's free. And the only thing easier than subscribing to it is unsubscribing if you decide you don't like it. Leslie Kossoff is our guest, and we're talking about installing a quality process in your small business. Leslie, manufacturing companies, little small manufacturing companies probably don't have a lot of trouble understanding how to manage their statistical information, and because, you know, there's so much repetition and that sort of thing, and it's something that you can sit there and sort of watch happen. But other companies, construction companies, farmers, doctor's offices, florist shops, retail operations, whatever it might be that aren't manufacturing related, it's a little bit more difficult, maybe not to do quality, install a quality process, but to understand how it would work in those organizations. What would be some of the first things that you specifically, some tools that you would think that they need to start with?
The very first thing that I recommend, particularly for small service businesses, is for the business owner to step back and think about the decisions that he or she is having to make that he can't figure out why the decisions are moving up to his level.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the first sign that there's waste inside of the system. And what you're really looking for is waste in any form. Now, in service organizations, the biggest waste comes in the form of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's how much time is being spent doing something that should take a much lower amount of time to achieve, but somehow you're still having to take that amount of time. Then you can start pulling it apart and looking at what's causing all of that time to be added in.
Plus the time that it takes to redo what wasn't done right to start with.
Oh, and that particularly in a service organization, is initially pretty hard to get at. I worked with one construction firm, and they built manufactured houses, and so they kind of crossed the line of being both a service and a manufacturing organization.
Mm-hmm.
They prided themselves on the fact that they had the best service record of any company in the industry until the CEO realized that just those beautiful service numbers were also on the verge of putting them out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And so in his case, it was a matter of stepping back and saying, wait, we've got this great reputation, we've got customers that love us, the money that we're bringing in is really good, but we're not being able to see and keep money on the final bottom line when all is said and done.
But wouldn't the low-hanging fruit be the redos? Wouldn't that be the first place to look to try to improve the quality?
Yes. Yes, it is. And that's exactly it. It is the lowest hanging fruit. And it's usually the first place that you do look, to simply take a look at what are the things that aren't working, what are the things we're having to fix after the fact, and let's get rid of that.
Now, let me stop you for a second, and let's apply a little statistical analysis. As much as I hate to do this, folks, because this is not something that I enjoy either, but let's say that you in a month's time, you recorded, you provide chemicals or paper or office supplies or whatever it is that you deliver to your customers, and in a month's time, you count up the number of redos. How many times did you have to go back out because something wasn't on the truck, or because it was backordered, or it was broken, or whatever, and you had to go out in the middle of the night because somebody didn't do something right? Count those up. That's a number. That can become a statistic, and then compare that to how many total times you went out at all. Does that make sense, Leslie?
It makes a lot of sense, and just be prepared. All I can do is warn the small business owners, be prepared, because when you start looking at the number of times that you're doing that, and again, providing that marvelous quality service, being so responsive to your customers, and suddenly seeing what it's costing you to operate that way, it's a pretty horrifying realization.
It scared the bejeebers out of you.
One of my clients referred to it as having their dirty laundry hung out for everybody to
see.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, that, you know, what you may not realize, and I'm going to propose that most small business owners who are in the profile that we're talking about don't realize that maybe 5, 10, 15, 20% of everything that they of their total activity is redo. And now with gasoline prices like it is, if you're talking about putting another truck back on the road, and as much as we're having to pay people, if you have to put, you're going to have to put somebody in that truck. Think about that. Think about none of that having to happen. How much would that put on your bottom line?
And be very happy if it's only 5, 10, or 15% of
right.
what you're doing.
Right.
Yes.
But won't that lead you into the root cause of those things?
It will lead you on the journey to the root cause of those things.
I like that word journey. I think that's an important word to for us to highlight a little bit, Leslie. This is a journey. This,
yes.
Folks, this is not a place you're going to find yourself and you're going to spin around and fix it. This is a journey that you're going to have to take, and it's going to be a journey as long as you're in business if you do it right. Stand by, Leslie. We're going to take a quick one. Folks, it's 50 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend, Leslie Kossoff. We're talking about quality. Stay with us. And I want to tell you about some of the shows that are coming up. Elise Bennin is going to be joining us, and she's going to be talking to us about online marketing. Joan Pride is going to be back with us to talk to us about the most recent Kiplinger letter. Barbara Weltman will be taking your calls on tax tips coming up on tax season, and also Jonathan Zuck with the Association for Competitive Technology, and he's going to be talking to us about the world of information technology, high tech as I call it, and we're going to be talking to him about that. And those are some of the shows that are coming up the rest of this week. We're continuing to visit with our good friend Leslie Kossoff. We're talking about quality, and I used the word root cause a minute ago, and Leslie, you've got some things you want to say about that.
Root cause is one of the most important concepts to understand in truly getting at where quality is occurring and where it's not in your organization. And it's not easy to get to, but it's easy to understand how to get there. What you have to do to get to the root cause of a problem is to ask the question, why, five times.
Why five times?
The first questioning, and again, using the example that you gave of, you know, here you sent out the truck and you're having to send the truck out again, whether it's because the supplies weren't there or they were the wrong supplies that were being delivered, whatever it might have been, the first question is always just, you know, why did that happen? It's, you know, how did that happen is usually the former whose fault was it, which is really the wrong question.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, you start with that question of why is this happening? And what that will get you to is everything from your picking process to the order entry process to how you're getting the orders from your customers and, you know, whether they come by fax or if it's a direct order entry system.
Might be a vendor problem.
It might very well be a vendor problem. There are so many different reasons, and as you go through and then continue to ask these lower and lower levels of why that get you truly to that root cause, what you may find is that you need to change your order system. You may need to change your vendors. It may be that you need to work more cooperatively with your vendors. One of the things...
You may have one person back there on the dock that just can't get things right.
And if that's the case, you go back in and you start asking, why is that the case also? Mm-hmm. Is it a matter of training? And particularly in small businesses, one of the hardest things to do is to give adequate time to standardized, consistent training, which is crucial for the business to be able to succeed.
Right, absolutely.
So where I would recommend the business owner go at this point in their thinking is first to look at quality as strategy And as you said earlier, to incorporate it into their marketing thinking about their organization, because that will then lead them into looking at the areas of the organization that need to be addressed sooner rather than later. Look at the cost sheets. Take a look at your financials and see where are your costs higher than you would like them to be. Of course, in every area, you know, expenses are always higher than we would like them to be. But there are invariably certain areas that need more attention sooner. And again, there's your low-hanging fruit, because then the quality process directly translates into profits.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Folks, if you don't do it for your customers, do it for you. I don't know how much more important that we can say it than that. Do it for yourself, for your own companies, because if you're not successful, you can't stay around to serve those customers. Leslie, that's going to have to be the last word, because I want to mention your books one more time. Managing for Quality, folks, check that out. And also her new book is called Executive Thinking. Leslie's going to be back in 2 weeks, and we're going to talk some more about quality in your small business. Her last name is spelled K-O-S-S-O-F-F. Leslie, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We'll do it again. Good job.
Thank you.
Got to go for this hour, folks. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is...
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.